The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler,
best-selling author,
actor,
and lead singer of Fozzy.
Now
he's rocking the podcast world.
Yay!
This is Talk Is Jericho.
Talk Is Jericho.
Starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk Is Jericho, the pot of thunder and rock and roll. Spell you under will be broken by Chris Jericho, and it's Friday.
It's Friday, gotta get down on Friday.
The People's Podcast has arrived. The remedy for boredom is here. Let's go for a ride. Ding-a-ling, ding-a-ling, ding-ding, ding-a-ling, ding-a-ling, ding-ding, ding-a-ling, ding-a-ling, ding-ding, ding-a-ling, ding-a-ling. Ain't seen nothing yet. Welcome to Talk Is Jericho. How in the hell are ya, my fine Jericho-holics here today? Got a good show for you today, something a little different. Adult film legend Asa Akira is coming up. And guess what? It's a PG-13 interview. Hard to believe, but true. Asa is super funny, very, very cool. She's breaking down the fact and fiction of the porn scene, busting some myths of what's real and what's not on a porn set. Also talking about personally what led her down the path to adult film stardom and the real truth about what kind of money adult film stars make in the business. She's talking about body issues, acne, stereotypes, and of course we'll hear all about her book, Insatiable, A Love Story. In fact, you want to read Asa's book for yourself? You know where you can get her book, right? At Amazon. And if you do, please use my links, man. I got Amazon links for the USA, the UK, and the Canada. Easiest way to support the show. Every time you shop at Amazon through one of my links, Amazon gives a small percentage of your purchase back to the show to help us cover production costs. Won't cost you anything extra. No hidden fees or charges. Just go to podcastone.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page. Then hit the Talk Is Jericho button. You know what else you can get on Amazon? Okay, how about the new Fozzy album? Do you want to start a war? Or maybe the new Theory of a Dead Man album, Savages, which is a coincidence because Fozzy and Theory on tour right now. Got so many great shows under our belts. Had a show in Nashville the other day with Dave Mustaine came to the show. I didn't even know. He had texted a friend of mine and told him that he was coming down to see me, but didn't text me, which was a little peculiar, but he showed up. Great to see him. Always cool to have one of the greatest rock and roll thrash metal legends ever in the house hanging out and watching the Fozz. If you haven't seen us play, You can still come this Sunday, New York City at the Gramercy Theater. That's a headlining show. Then we got Lancaster, Pennsylvania on October 6th, October 7th in Boston, October 8th in Sayreville, New Jersey, 10th in Rochester, 11th in Cleveland, 12th in Bowlesburg, Pennsylvania. And after the Theory of a Dead Man tours, about a month later, the Cinderblock Party Tour with Fozzy, Texas Hippie Coalition, Shaman's Harvest will be going all across the nation at that, well, across the eastern part of the nation. That starts on November 20th in Flint, Michigan. Go to FozzyRock.com for all information on the Cinderblock Party and all information about the remaining Theory of a Dead Man shows. Tour's cooking, band is cooking, smoking. You are going to love it. I guarantee it. And on top of that, besides buying the new Theory of a Dead Man album, the new Fozzy album, the new Texas Coalition album, the new Shaman's Harvest album, you can also pre-order my new book, The Best in the World at What? I have no idea. It's dropping on October 14th. If you happen to be doing some Amazon shopping, you can help out the show and my book in the process. Remember, go to podcast1.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcast free banner at the top of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. Bookmark so you can get to those links in one easy click. All right. Like I said, The Best in the World at What? I Have No Idea is coming out on October 14th. If you are interested, pre-order it now. That helps me out immensely. And I read chapter 6 last week, Sean the Liar. Let's go to number 27, chapter 27, which was my dad's number when he played for the New York Rangers. It's kind of always been a number in my family. So I'll read chapter 27 to you right now. It's called The Effeminate Tough Guy. When Big Show and I lost the tag team titles at DX in December 2009, I wasn't supposed to be on Raw any longer. But then Mike Tyson was booked for the show in mid-January 2012, and since Vince wanted my final Monday Night Blow-Off angle to be with him, we needed to think of a way to get me reinstated. What he came up with was one of the most bizarre angles of my career. At the final Raw before Christmas 2009, guest host Johnny Damon was going to grant Show one wish from Santa Claus. He would then confront Santa in the ring and ask that his tag team partner and best friend Chris Jericho be allowed back on the program. Santa, of course, would say yes, but then that dastardly hornswoggle would run in the ring and rip off Santa's beard, revealing that jolly old Saint Nick was actually me. To make things even more preposterous, after I was unmasked like Shandy, Show and I would be attacked by a gang of midgets. It's as ridiculous as it sounds, but as Loverboy once said, we better start from the start. The big storyline of the night was Hornswoggle taking DX to Little People's Court for their constant mistreatment. Sean and Hunter would crawl into the ring where Swoggs lived, end up in another dimension, and embark on a wacky Alice in Wonderland-esque journey to find him. It was as rotten as it sounds, and you'd have to be on opium to find any of it entertaining. They would eventually find the Little People's Courtroom populated with a dozen dwarves who would put them on trial and find DX guilty. It was completely hokey, the kind of thing you'd only see in the WWE. Then after all that horse, Show and I would treat all the munchkins to a massive beatdown. When the ragtag collection of minikins showed up for rehearsal, it was amazing to see how small they really were. Vince even told a couple of them to go home because he was afraid they might get hurt in the melee. The idea was they would surround us in a semicircle and attack, but Show and I would eliminate every last one of them until DX came to chase us away. The thing had potential to stink out the joint, and when we were finished going over everything, Vince looked at me and said, "My dad will be rolling in his grave after this." I responded, "Who can blame him? Besides, it's your fault. You booked this." I put on a Santa outfit, complete with fat suit, granny glasses, bushy white eyebrows, and gaudy circles of rouge on my face that made my cheeks look like roses, my nose like a cherry. But it was quite convincing, and nobody recognized me. I got the final approval from Vince, who gave me the thumbs up but told me, "Make sure to change that prissy walk of yours. Everyone will know it's you if you don't." Vince always mocks my sliding gait at every opportunity and once told me, "You are the most effeminate tough guy I've ever met." He also hated when I went through my scarf phase, that's why Alberto Del Rio wears them to the ring as a heel, and abhors it when I sit with my legs crossed. Macho, Macho McMahon! So I practiced watching like I had a candy cane up my ass and spoke with a weird accent that was half Mrs. Doubtfire, half Stewie from Family Guy. I had to come up with something. I wasn't about to be outdone by fresh ground pepper Santa, now was I? The segment began with Show in the Ring summoning Santa to hear his wish, and out he came with a rockin' version of Jingle Bells as his entrance music and a Bella twin on each arm. It was ridiculous to see Santa Claus written in huge letters on the Titantron with accompanying falling snowflakes like he was coming out to challenge Stone Cold Steve Austin for the world title. I strolled down the aisle doing everything I could not to walk like an effeminate tough guy, waving to the crowd like I was the Pope and bellowing ho 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 like a mofo-fo. Santa commented that Show was the biggest boy he'd ever seen, and it was probably a smart idea for Santa to sit on his lap instead. He asked Show if he'd been a good boy in his Stewie Doubtfire drawl, and he replied with a resounding yes, Santa, in an over-the-top, innocent voice. Then, Show told Santa that his only Christmas wish was for his best friend Chris Jericho to be reinstated on Raw. Santa pondered the request thoughtfully and finally granted his request, which, of course, the crowd hated. I couldn't believe they were actually buying this. Show and Santa celebrated until Hornswoggle jumped into the ring and pulled off Santa's beard. Santa stared at Swoggs in a not-so-jolly way and chased him out of the ring. The crowd finally got it and gasped in recognition as I ripped off the rest of my disguise and revealed myself. "That's Chris Jericho," said announcer Michael Cole with shock. Then it was our turn to be shocked as Hornswoggle and his dirty half-dozen, get it, emerged from under the ring and hopped into position. I can only imagine how uncomfortable Show felt as he had a phobia of little people, like the elephant and the mouse, but he held his cool and the standoff began. I'd told the Tiny Terrors before the show to wait until I gave the cue before bum-rushing us, because as always I wanted the crowd at its peak before the fight began. But the fans weren't too sure what to make of the preposterous scenario and were almost silent, so I decided it was time to get it on and get it over with. I gave the cue, they charged, and I threw them off one by one like I was Gulliver until there was only one little guy hanging onto my leg for dear life as I dragged him along the mat. This is even more ridiculous considering I was wearing Santa trousers, suspenders, big black boots, rosy cheeks, and a rummy's nose. Show pulled the little guy off my leg and gave him a crushing side slam that shook him up so badly he had to go to the hospital for real. Then adding insult to injury, the giant destroyer picked him up by the legs like a Thanksgiving turkey and tossed him nonchalantly over the top rope. I thought we'd get major heat for beating up a gang of little people, but we were getting more of the what the hell are we watching reaction until I trapped Hornswoggle and pushed him into Show's massive mitt for a chokeslam. The crowd finally woke up and screamed at us to please stop until the DX Saviors ran down and chased us away. It was a ludicrous end to the show, and when I walked through Gorilla, I asked Vince if his dad was still rolling in his grave. Ugh, he's doing full-on gymnastics routine at this point. A few weeks after Tyson's DX betrayal finally got me kicked off Raw, Show and I broke up forever. It happened after I was staging a full-on demonstration outside the arena in Hartford, protesting my unfair treatment by the WWE by marching back and forth with a placard that read, "Stop the Jericho Embargo." I'm still not sure what that means, but it makes me laugh. I set up a petition that I wanted the gathering crowd to sign, expressing their desire to see me back on Raw. I figured nobody would participate as they'd be happy to see Jericho finally get his comeuppance, but the opposite happened and the fans were signing it as quickly as they could. After a few attempts to find legit Jericho haters in the crowd, we gave up and added a few plants to insult me instead. Finally, Show came outside to tell me he wouldn't be helping me with my quest to get back on Raw because we were through. We thought it would be funny to do the same, like we were breaking up for real in some sort of cliched romantic comedy starring Vince Vaughn and Jennifer Aniston and play it totally straight. "I'm doing this for us, Show," I pleaded. "We deserve a match against DX, and I just can't let it go. I don't want this to end." "Let it go, Chris. It's over," Show replied tenderly. "Don't say that, Show. I stay awake at night thinking about us. What we had was special, and you can't deny that." "It was special, Chris. No one knows me like you did. But it's time to move on. I'm on Raw, you're on SmackDown. Long-distance relationships don't work, Chris. It's over." "Is there someone else?" I asked. Show shook his head. "No, but I'm moving on. Just know I care about you." "I'm always going to cherish the memories, Show," I yelled in desperation as he walked away and out of my life forever. I ate a carton of Haagen-Dazs and cried myself to sleep that night. All right, Chapter 27, Effeminate Tough Guy, featuring Hornswoggle, who was Wednesday's guest on Talk is Jericho. If you haven't listened to that, go back and check it out. Very, very cool interview, chat with my boy, talking about being a little guy in a big man's world. And that was from Best in the World at What I Have No Idea, available now on pre-order, and it's out on October 14th. At all fine bookstores, and I will be at some of those bookstores signing, doing in-store signings. You can come check me out for all of those. October 14th, Barnes & Noble, Carl Place, New York. October 15th, Bookends, Ridgewood, New Jersey. October 16th, Barnes & Noble, Staten Island, New York. October 17th, third place books in Lake Forest Park, Washington. October 18th, Fort Lewis, Fort McChord in the Seattle area for our fine military. October 21st, Barnes & Noble, Dallas, Texas. October 23rd, Brandon, Books A Million, Brandon, Florida. October 25th, Tampa, Florida, Barnes & Noble. All right, all the plugs are done. All of the reading is done. Now, coming up right after this, the one and only legendary Asa Akira.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Talk is Jericho.
I'm sitting here with Asa Akira across the table, and one of the most famous adult what's the politically correct adult actress.
I don't think there is a politically correct way to say it.
I mean, you just say,
like,
porn star.
Yeah, like, even if you say porn star, it's not offensive. But I found that a lot of people think that it is.
It might have been, like, you know, 10 years ago or something.
Yeah.
You know, porn star, like stripper. So it was
right.
An exotic dancer.
Right.
Or like a gas station attendant was, like, you know, a fuel dispensing engineer.
So I guess I would be, I heard someone else say erotic provider the other day.
Erotic enabler.
Yeah.
A pleasure enabler.
Yeah. I guess performer would just be
adult performer.
Yeah.
Adult actress, mm-hmm. I guess maybe. And the funny thing is about this relationship is that we have the same literary agent.
Yes.
The guy, Mark Gerald is his name.
He's the best.
He's great. He's like a total laid back hippie.
He's awesome.
Yeah. Like super cool. And he kept saying, because he's got you should really talk to Asa, man. And I was like, yeah, I should. And then when your book came out, I was like, well, dude, hook us up. And that's kind of how it all came to be. It's like, oh, she'd be great for the podcast, all because of Mark. You should really call Asa, maybe talk to her. I'll call her if you want to. But he's not gay. He's like, he's married. He's
not,
got a daughter.
Yeah. He has a hot wife, too. He's the best.
So, and that's the guy that you obviously did. Did he come to you about doing your book?
Well, I don't know if you know David Cho, but I do a podcast with David Cho.
Okay.
And he represents him.
What's your podcast called?
It's called DVD ASA.
And where can we find that?
Just DVDASA.com.
Okay, cool.
Or on iTunes.
Gotcha.
And so he represents Dave, and then he was like looking through my Twitter feed, and he was like, hey, like, I think she could write a book. So we hooked up through Dave, and then I sent him in an essay, and then like the next month we had a book deal.
Wow.
So yeah, it happened so fast.
Now, the book is called Insatiable Porn, A Love Story.
Mm-hmm.
Did you write it yourself?
I did. Yeah, I did. And I think, you know, it's really funny because people will be like, oh, did you have a ghost written? And I'm like so flattered when they say that because
it's that good.
Exactly. Like, it kind of gives me validation in a way.
Yeah.
But I mean, you read it. It's very, mm-hmm. It's written exactly how I speak.
It's very wide open. And then, you know, when you're writing an autobiography, that's what you need to do. You need to write completely wide open because
mm-hmm.
People expect that. I mean, we know who you are and we know how all your accomplishments, but we're all, have all made different decisions in our lives, some mistakes, some things, you know, we're all kind of damaged in a way. And that's why I liked reading your book, because you don't leave anything out, not just the porn part, like, you know, talking about drugs and, you know, everything that you've done. It's just like, this is what I've done. You like it? Great. You don't, you know, forget it.
Yeah. And you know what's really interesting about, like, writing it was, it felt like it felt safer than, like, telling, say, my husband.
Mm-hmm.
Which is so weird because – and I feel the same way about, like, podcasting or being on the radio or anything in public.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like when I'm revealing something, it doesn't – I'm not as embarrassed about it, even though more people are going to hear it.
Yeah.
And it's just – it's this really, like, strange thing. But I like it. I like – sharing.
It's easier to share with strangers,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, look into the camera eye where we don't know if there's one person watching or 1 million.
Right.
Or writing a book, like, someone's going to read it, but you won't be there.
Right.
So it's okay.
Right. It makes it safe.
Yeah, exactly. Now, how did you find writing the book, the process of it?
Writing it was the easiest part for me.
Mm-hmm.
I've always, like, kept a journal and I read a lot. So, like, writing came really, really natural to me. But the hard part was like picking a title, picking the cover, like all the other stuff that goes around it, which takes like a year and a half. That to me was like, oh my gosh, this is insane.
Well, and then there's a draft and then you redraft it and then there's the legal draft and
yeah.
there's the copy edit.
Oh my gosh. Like the copy edit alone took like months. And I think, you know, by the time I was done, I was like, I am so sick of writing about myself.
Yeah.
Like, I never want to write about myself again, which is something I never thought would happen.
Yeah. And when you and you know, like, okay, after this story is this one, and after this story, like, you know it so well because you've had to read it so many times.
Yeah.
Like, I just finished my third one, and it took about a year. But now that I'm done with it, I don't want to read it. I don't want to ever see the damn thing again. I know how it goes. I know which chapters after which.
I'm
done with it.
You can read it in 30 minutes.
Yeah, and it's like, I'm bored of these stories. Like, done already.
Totally.
You know?
I totally agree. And, you know, I did leave it alone for about probably like 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then I read the audiobook version.
Mm.
And then I was able to enjoy it again because I had like not looked at it for so long. So that was cool.
Yeah, you got to revisit it.
Yeah. Like, and I got to look at it kind of a little bit more objectively than when I was writing it. Because like you said, you read it over and over,
uh-huh.
like paragraph after paragraph, like as you're writing it, that it's just...
I would find myself debating, like, should this be the or should it be and?
Yeah, like the most simple
thing. Is it and
things.
Or the? Yeah, I just write it
or
and
like,
change
it. Or like,
is
that a word? Yeah, just, oh my gosh, yeah, it's so like these little mundane things.
I did notice that, which I would assume you probably did it on purpose, so there's no pictures. Like,
yeah.
The first thing you do when you have a book is, I get it, and I'm looking through, like, what picture? Oh, there's one picture on the inner sleeve, and that's it. Was that done by design?
For sure. You know, I went with Grove Press because they really, like, understood what I wanted to do. I mean, honestly, I would have been happy with anything.
Mm-hmm.
Just to be able to write a book, I think, is, like, so special, and I feel so lucky. But a lot of the other publishers we were talking to, they wanted to do like a cover shot of me in a bikini,
oh,
and
yeah,
then
yeah.
you know,
cliched,
straight
yeah.
to paperback pictures throughout. And like I did want to make something taken a little bit more seriously because, you know, I mean I'm in porn. Like
mm.
I'm already taken so not seriously that I wanted to do something that's, you know, like a little bit credible.
Well, I mean, even when you're talking about the cover of the book, I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's kind of like this really cool, like Japanese type painted artwork.
Yeah.
You know, that's even really classy, opposite of what you'd expect.
For sure. And David Cho actually did that. And I'm so lucky because he's my friend. So if I had to pay for that cover, it would have cost me like $1 million. And I'm so lucky that I got it for free.
Now, you just said something that was interesting to me because I deal with it sometimes too, that you're not taken seriously
mm-hmm.
because you're a porn star.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how do you mean by that? People think you're ditzy or people think you're just slutty and all you want to do is have sex all the time or that you're like stupid or what do you get?
All of those things
mm-hmm.
and more. You know, a lot of people think I'm a drug addict. They definitely think I'm like this crazy party person. And you know, it's not that like I'm complaining because I knew what I was signing up
mm-hmm.
for. Like it's not that it bothers me. It's just that this one thing, the book, I wanted it to be taken a little bit more seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, like it's kind of like being in porn is it's kind of nice sometimes because people expect so little of me that if I even show up to a place, they're like, wow, like you're so normal. And I'm like,
yeah, like, hello.
Like if I can put a sentence together, they're like, you're really
right.
intelligent.
Wow, you're smart. I never thought that.
Yeah, expectations are really low.
It's funny because yesterday we were going to do this, but we had a cross communication. It's like, oh, the porn star just forgot. Well, no, the idiot who's running the show, me, forgot. Well, Stacey, we forgot to remind you. So it's like it wasn't the dumb porn star just forgot her commitments again. No, it was the dumb guys running it.
I mean, that definitely happens from time
to
time.
Well, sure, but because you're a human being, though, right? And that's because – now, I mean, you started out in New York City. You're Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
Do you speak Japanese?
I do. At home, my parents are bilingual, but they're immigrants. So at home, we speak in Japanese.
Anata no name nandes.
Namae wa Asa desu.
I went to Japan like 60 times.
Yeah, I bet.
But – it was hard to learn how to speak Japanese, man.
It's hard because the alphabet's different and just everything.
Well, for me, what I found, have you been to Japan
yeah,
quite a few times, I'm sure, is that the dialect is different
mm-hmm.
in Tokyo from Osaka, from Sapporo.
Yeah.
So what I did is I gave up, because when you try and learn a different language and you don't get it the first times, and people look at you with that blank stare,
yeah,
you lose your confidence,
for
right?
For sure. Oh, definitely.
So I actually learned how to read katakana.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because there's only 25 characters,
yeah,
and they're close to English letters. So Yeah. It's like, you know, I just went to the library and I got a photocopy of the 25 characters, and I would just drive down the highway and read billboards or buses or
That's
magazines
really impressive.
Or whatever. But I mean, because I wanted to learn something other than just, you know, I'm illiterate. You know what I mean? So, but I mean, my point being, so you came from very traditional, your parents came right from Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And Japan, the sexual culture there is strange, because it's a very,
so
like, you know, honorable and quiet. The girls are very submissive, you know, to their husbands.
Mm-hmm.
But yet you'll see businessmen reading magazines of like cartoon
on the train,
giant penises killing people and like girls peeing on the beach. Very strange.
And they
society.
Sell them at like 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
And people will read them like at 7-Eleven. It's
yeah.
really weird. Like it's on one hand, it's like so sexually repressed. Like, you can't even blow your nose in public. Not that that's a sexual thing, but that, I think, gives you an idea of, like,
right.
bodily functions are not accepted or not okay. But, yeah, on the other hand, there's – I mean, even – I remember, like, I lived in Japan from 6 to 12. And as a kid, I remember watching cartoons, like, on Saturday morning. And they would be about, like, girls in high school losing their virginity. And,
wow.
And this is, like, made for my age group. And it was just – it's so bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, even if you watch a porno in Japan,
mm-hmm.
they've got the – I used to call it like the pixelated Rubik's
yeah.
Cube. It's like a square that goes over top of all the genitalia.
Yeah.
It's like, this is the worst porno ever, because you can't even see anything. You know?
It's like, and it's not even like – it's like – it's not even like smartly done. Like they just put this weird thing there that's so distracting.
Yes, yeah, exactly. I remember a few years ago when the NHL started playing on Fox, they would have – people said they couldn't follow the puck. So they put this blue comet around the puck, so whenever it was shot, you'd have this big animated – and that's what it always reminded me of. It's like an animated porno where here's where you're supposed to look,
right.
but you can't really
but
see
you can't
anything.
See it.
Yeah, you know?
It's just like an arrow.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, pointing to nothing. And then the girls, too, would just be screaming.
Yeah.
Like Japanese girls, when they're having sex, just like this over the top, like you're killing them.
And they love like the whole rape fantasy. And I think it's because they're so sexually repressed. Like I think it just, for girls anyway, I think it just kind of gives them an excuse to like be sexual beings without being like responsible for it.
Interesting,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, here too, like, I think all rape fantasies definitely somehow stem from that.
Of being repressed?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, unless you're a victim and, like, mm-hmm. then there's that whole thing. But I do think, like, rape fantasies come from society being, or, like, really shunning women's mm-hmm. sexuality. And then, I mean, I definitely have a rape fantasy. And, you know, I wouldn't say I grew up so sexually repressed, but it wasn't something like we talked about or anything like that.
Do you think it was something that
And I felt shameful about masturbating and stuff.
When you were like a teenager?
Or even when I was like a young kid, yeah.
Because everybody does that. Were you told that this is wrong?
Definitely. I mean, I remember my mom... And my mom and I have a great relationship, but we just have very different views on sexuality. But I remember being a kid and like she knew that once I put the covers over me, I would start masturbating.
Oh.
So she made this rule that I wasn't allowed to have covers on me until I fell asleep, which kind of sounds abusive now, but it wasn't like that at
it's
all.
It's cold, Mom. Yeah, it's February.
It wasn't like that at all. I definitely carried a lot of shame about it. For a long time.
It's almost like growing up in like a heavy Catholic household or something where it's like if you do this, it's a sin and you will, you know, burn in hell if you masturbate or touch yourself.
Right.
The Japanese family environment was kind of something the same?
It's hard for me to say because my parents are immigrants, so they're almost like – they're already kind of rebels
mm-hmm.
within Japanese culture just by like being
But the fact
immigrants.
They moved to the States.
Right.
Oh,
and my
wow.
dad's a photographer and so like they're way more liberal than – I would imagine, like most Japanese families.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, it's not something that was shunned. It was more something that was like, we just don't talk about it.
Mm.
Like, I never had that talk with my parents, like, you know,
the birds and the bees.
Exactly.
You just had to figure it out for yourself?
Yeah. I mean, I figured it out, obviously.
I remember when I was – this is a great story. It was in my second book. Get the buzzer ready, Stacey. When I was 10 years old, mm-hmm. I told my – my cousin and I were talking. He was 8. And I said, well, you know, how are babies made? My mom told me that they were made by you kiss – daddy kisses mommy, and then the seed passes from the mouth to the mouth, and
mouth
that's how
mouth.
Babies are made. And I told my cousin Chad this, and he was 8. He goes, that's not how babies are made. Babies are made by and I was like,
Whoa. What?
Yeah, listen to me. I told you to watch your language. Listen to me. And he was like 8. And I was like, what are you talking about? No, that's how babies are made. And I said, what? It's not by kissing? He goes, no. So my 8-year-old cousin taught me about the birds and the bees when I was 10.
That's pretty
wise cousin Chad. Exactly. Do you think because of the environment that you grew up in, more of a suppressed, like we're just not going to talk about sex, is that kind of what led you to be more curious about sex and get more involved in it?
Definitely. It's definitely, definitely possible because I've been so curious about sexuality since a really young age. Like I even when I was really little, I was like really turned on by like not that I identified that feeling as being horny, but I was just really turned on by like pregnancy and seeing pregnant women. So like I think somewhere in me, I must have known like she did something to get pregnant.
Yeah.
You know, and like I mean, even as like in middle school and stuff, like I couldn't wait to start being a sexual person. Like I couldn't wait to get rid of my virginity and just really start living.
Yeah.
So it's definitely something I've always been really curious about.
So how did you find out about sex if you weren't actually told about it? Talking with your friends and
yeah, definitely talking about it with my friends. I mean, I don't remember like the first moment. Mm-hmm. I do remember like one time when I was in first grade, I borrowed a book from the school library about how babies are made. And I remember asking my dad to read it to me. And he's like, I'm not doing that.
And we'll just like, read Mary Poppins.
Yeah. So I don't know like when.
What was your first introduction to a porno movie?
I was probably in about third grade and I went to my friend's house to sleep over. And this is when I lived in Japan and I didn't have cable and she did.
Mm.
And late at night, this Mother Goose porn would come on. And I'm pretty sure, like looking back, I think it was softcore. I don't think there was even any penetration or anything. But I just remember being like, whoa, what is this?
And you were
this
how old at the
cool.
time?
Like third grade.
So you can remember that vividly.
Oh, for sure. And I remember like we kept having sleepovers and we'd be like, let's stay up until that thing comes on. And it wasn't even like, it's not like we were like, oh, this makes me so horny. It was just like, what is that? Like,
right.
That's cool.
So how did you tell us about the journey about how you got into being, you know, one of the biggest porn stars in the history of the world? Does it start with stripping at first? I know you worked you were a dominatrix in the dungeon. What was the first step?
The first step was the dominatrix. And like by then, I mean, all throughout high school, I was like, I want to do something in the adult entertainment industry.
So you knew this from a young age?
For sure. Like, I mean, none of my friends were surprised. Hmm. Even when I became a dominatrix, it was like, oh, naturally.
It's almost like you were born to do it. Like,
that's how I feel. I mean, I feel so silly like saying that. Just because of the way most people react.
Mm-hmm.
But I really do feel that way. And like, so I started as a dominatrix and then I did stripping and then I was on Bubba's show in Florida. And then there I met Gina Lynn.
Mm-hmm.
And then she introduced me to everyone and I flew out to LA like 2 weeks later. And everything felt like it was like a progression for me. It was like I graduated to the next step, every level. It was like a promotion.
A sexual promotion. Let's talk about being a dominatrix, though. I mean, how do you go to dominatrixemployers.com? Or like, how do you fill out an application? How does
I don't know how most people do it. And like, this is why I feel – I don't know how I feel about things like fate or destiny. Like, I haven't decided yet.
Uh-huh.
But it does feel something like fate because one day I was walking down the street and a guy came up to me and he was like, would you like to be in the adult entertainment industry?
Like just walk past him.
Yes. It was like on 33rd Street in New York, which is like not even really like a sexy place or anything. Like I wasn't like in a strip club or anything.
Right.
I was just walking down the street and I was like, yes, I would. And I was 19 and like, looking back, I'm like, was I insane? I would never talk to, like, some stranger who spoke to me.
Who you met
like
on the street.
Yeah, and he had, like, long hair, and, like, he just... Not that that means anything, but I mean, he was just...
He had a tattoo.
Yeah.
And he was wearing sunglasses.
He was just, like, not, like... I mean, I don't even know what a guy would have to look like for me to follow him now.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
it's kind of a danger, like, neon sign.
Yeah, it's like a huge red flag.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and he's like, well, my dungeon is right upstairs. And I followed him upstairs.
He said, my dungeon is upstairs.
My dungeon is upstairs.
Wow, what a pickup line.
At that age, I didn't even know what, like, S&M really was. It's like I had seen it, like, in movies, you know? And not even porno movies.
Right, like in Robin Hood.
Or, yeah. So, like, chastity belts and stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, I went upstairs, and then I started training the next day. On him. Like, everything about it sounds so shady. Like, he's a lifestyle submissive, mm-hmm. and he was the general manager, and it was the night shift. So that's, like, the shady shift.
In his dungeon, where he was the client.
He was the general manager and my client and the guy I was training on.
I love dungeons so much. I'm not just a client. I own the place.
Exactly. And, like, he – so I don't know. And, like – honestly, at that point in my life, I didn't even identify as, like, a submissive or a dominant or mm-hmm. anything like that. I didn't even know these words existed, really. So it was a really cool, like, learning experience, and mm-hmm. I don't think that I could do it now.
Something when you're young and crazy, right?
Yeah.
But you said you trained. Like, what kind of – what did you train? Like, what do you have to learn? Like, what techniques
like
do you have to learn?
Like, how to use the machines.
Oh,
or
the
how
machines.
To tie someone up. Yeah. Like, there was this one machine I used. I guess it's called sounding. I learned this way after I did it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like this metal rod that goes into the man's urethra, and then you electrocute him from
the
inside
out. Oh, my goodness.
I know.
Wow.
Like, your muscles just twitched.
I literally just, like, I cringed away from you. Like, don't do it to me, please. Now, there's a podcast for you.
So,
what's it called again? Sounding?
It's called Sounding.
Jericho gets sounded live on Talk is Jericho.
That'd be fun. Yeah, invite me back for that one.
Yeah.
I'll go to Florida for that one.
All right,
one.
Cool. We'll make a date.
So, and then, yeah, like, I just learned, you know, I had never used a strap-on until then.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had never peed on anyone until then.
And some guys just love this.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
that's a true kind of a warped sexual fetish.
They're coming out at like 3 a.m, sneaking out of their houses so that they can do it.
And probably like some prominent people in society, I would imagine.
For sure. I mean, generally they were like business, like pretty straight-laced businessmen type guys.
Mm.
And then also, surprisingly, a lot of Hasidic Jewish men.
Really? Mm-hmm.
But they didn't like me. They don't like Asians.
Oh.
So I never saw any.
Because there's a whole segment that just goes nuts for just Asian.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's one of the reasons why you've made it so far, because some guys have
for
a real
sure.
Asian fetish, right?
It's so easy to stand out in porn.
Mm-hmm.
Or even at the dungeon, it was like this. But it's so easy to stand out as an Asian girl. Like, it doesn't matter what you look like, really. Just being Asian.
Just Asian, yeah.
Like,
we want an Asian.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
So it's like, I think a lot of like people with Asian fetishes are just blinded by the Asian.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even like. They're all hot.
Right.
It's like guys who like big asses. Like, they don't care what the face looks like.
It's the ultimate example of. All Asians look the same. You just see an Asian,
right.
And that's all
and
you
that's
want.
It. Yeah,
you
like,
see a
okay,
big
that
ass
one,
that you want.
That
right,
one.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Now you read in your book. One of the interesting stories was that one of your customers came and just wanted to smoke crack with you.
Yeah.
In the dungeon,
mm-hmm.
And you didn't.
And I did it.
You didn't for a while.
No.
And then you did.
I saw him for like months without smoking crack with him.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day, like I was just like, he always offered, because I think crack is one of those drugs like. That like when you're on it, you want everyone around you to be
yes.
on it, you know, like Coke.
Right.
And so he always offered me, and I was always like, no. And at the whole time I was working at the dungeon, I had like a, I wouldn't say addiction, but I was doing a lot of painkillers.
Mm-hmm.
So I was always happy. Like I'm cool. You know, I don't need to get any higher than I am. And then one day I just like, I don't know, I was like, okay, let me try it. And then it was amazing.
So tell us about, like, I've never smoked crack before. Tell us about, like, what is the appeal that makes people just go completely insane for crack?
Well, the appeal definitely comes, like, after you smoke it. Because before that, it's like, ew, these people are disgusting.
Mm-hmm. That's what I mean, once you smoke it, though.
Mm-hmm. Once you smoke it, it's like smoking happiness. For real.
What a quote.
And it's crazy because, like...
What a quote.
like you smoke it, you inhale it, and as you hold the smoke in, and like you can literally feel like the happiness molecules spreading throughout your lungs.
Wow.
Yeah, and I feel bad saying that because it's like a commercial for crack, but
well, there is an appeal to it at the store, else people wouldn't do it, and that's why I wanted to ask you.
Yeah, for sure.
You know? So how were you able to stop and like not become a crack addict?
Well, first of all, I don't like any drugs that make me feel horrible after. Like, to me, it's just not worth it.
Right.
Like, I never liked coke. I never liked really ecstasy even. And crack was the worst come down ever.
Really?
Like, ever. It's so bad. It's just like so uncomfortable in your skin, and there's nothing you can do to escape it. Except for smoke more. And even when you smoke more, it's like, it's not as good as the first time.
Wow.
And it, like, you don't quite get there. Like, you're kind of just putting off coming down the whole time.
Wow. Are you talking about smoking the first time the day or the first time ever?
Well, I don't know, because I only did it for like one period of time.
Okay.
And then once I was coming down, I was like, that's it. I'm never doing this again. Like, it is not
You were
not
smart
worth
enough
it.
To know.
Not even smart enough. Like, if and you know what I always think about? Like, I always think maybe if the come down came first, maybe I would be more into drugs. Because I think just, like, the anticipation of, like, feeling horrible is not worth it for me.
Which is why people keep smoking it over and over and over again.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
You're listening to Talk is Jericho.
I'm sitting here with Asa Akira. What was the first porno you did? What was the name of it?
I believe it was Top Notch Bitches 5.
You know,
even a number one.
Top Notch Bitches 3 is my favorite.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, that was amazing.
It was all downhill from there.
It just went right downhill, but you kind of saved the series. And I always love that about porno movies when they had like the, like on Golden Blonde and Shaving Ryan's Privates. They would take famous movie titles and put them into, you know.
For sure.
Yeah, porno things. So, okay, so it was topless, or what was it called?
Top Notch Bitches 5.
Top Notch
Bitches. Or maybe it was 7. I really don't. It was either 5 or 7.
They're both critically acclaimed. What was it like the first time you had sex on camera?
It was so normal.
Really?
It felt like I wasn't even really, like, I was nervous like the day before, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But once it was that day, like, it was just like a normal day, and it wasn't even like, okay, here we go. It was just like, I didn't have to pump myself up or anything. Yeah, it was just like, it happened, and I was like, this is amazing. I want to do this for the rest of my life. It was like kind of like discovering a new high in a lot of ways. And, you know, I'm an exhibitionist, and I like performing. I like entertaining. I'm sure you do too. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you're a wrestler and a musician. Mm-hmm. And like, so it is kind of a high, you know? Like, in its own way. So I guess I just, like,
I can
hooked.
See that, though, because, I mean, you know, you're playing the character of – you're like – you're the same thing as I do. I'm Chris Jericho.
Mm-hmm.
In real life, I'm Chris Jericho on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
You're Asa Akira here, on Asa Akira on the screen. But when you're on the screen, or, you know, TV screen or phone or whatever it is nowadays, you're playing up to the part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, extra moaning, extra screaming, extra whatever it is. I mean, that's – and you know what your fans are looking for. You've created this character.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, and that's what you have to do.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's – that's who they – you're the fantasy projection.
I love it,
yeah.
Like, and I like being the fantasy. Like, it turns me on to think other people are being turned on by me.
By you.
I love it.
Wow.
So I don't know. Like, it's kind of scary too, though, at the same time, because I've been in the business 6 years and it has to end at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people aren't going to want to watch me forever, first of all. I'm like, you know, what if I choose to have a family or, you know, whatever. Like, it's just not realistic to think I can do this forever. So it's
– when you're in a business based on looks.
Yeah, it's scary. And, I mean, eventually I just want to eat everything and get fat. That's one of my
You're
fantasies.
Talking about your pizza addiction. Yeah. That's your fantasy, right? Exactly. I just want to eat pizza off of a fat guy's stomach.
Yeah, exactly. And so, then pass out.
But I mean, yeah, I mean, that is the thing. I mean, how old were you when you first started porn?
I was 23. And now I'm 29.
So what is the lifespan of a porno
on average
lead lady's career?
Well, on average, it's less than a year.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, thousands of girls come in every day. And
wow.
Then they do a few scenes and decide it's not for them, which is the worst, because you've just ruined your life for a few thousand dollars. And that's so not
because once you get one scene down,
with the internet, yeah,
right.
Like your worst enemy is going to see it,
right.
You know? So it sucks for them.
So either go for it all the way
totally.
Or don't do it.
Yeah. Or like the girls who are in it just for the money,
mm-hmm.
That's not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not enough money,
mm-hmm.
You know?
So what do you, like, if you go do a scene, I know there's different, I mean, if you're just like, I guess you have a normal,
mm-hmm.
normal penetration scene, man mm-hmm. and girl, guy, girl, what does that usually?
It depends. Like, when you first get in, you'll get about $800.
Wow.
Uh-huh. And then as you build your name, you can charge more. And then, I mean, it goes up to like $5,000.
For a normal mm-hmm. scene. Now, what about if you can do something crazy, like, you know?
You get more. And like, you know, you'll get a little bit more money for every guy if it's like,
yeah.
say, a group scene
yeah.
or whatever. But and then you can always charge a lot, like a big lump sum for your first anything,
mm-hmm.
like your first black guy or anything.
Okay.
Anything.
Wow. Especially once you get some name value.
Your first lesbian anal blah, blah, blah.
Right. First strap-on lesbian gorilla scene or whatever.
Yeah. So like the key is to like pace everything out.
So how did you... I mean, probably just don't even really know this, but how did you start getting to the point? I mean, you're thinking of the big name porno stars, you know, it's Jenna Jameson
mm-hmm.
and it's, you know, it's think about you and think about a few others. It's a select few, like you said, out of the thousands of girls
mm-hmm.
that get involved. How did you get to this point of being such
like,
a huge star?
Honestly, like, I think most of it is luck.
Mm.
Like the right companies just happen to want to shoot me at
the right time.
Yeah, like and it's crazy because, you know, things come in waves. Things are in style, out of style. And I don't know. Like I really just think it's luck. Like I'm definitely not the best looking person in the industry. Like there are so many girls who are drop dead gorgeous that go nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
So and like it's – I mean there are girls who are better performers than me. Like it's not – I don't feel like I'm necessarily the best at anything.
Mm-hmm.
I just really got lucky. And I think, you know, I don't know.
There's never really been like a huge, we talked about Asian
mm-hmm.
porn star. And maybe you came across the right time. You know,
where people just happened to want to see that. Maybe.
Right.
Now, well, Asia Carrera was the last one.
Oh, okay. Right.
Kobe Tai was big.
That was 10
that was a long
years
time
ago, right?
Though.
Yeah.
I think that has a lot to do with it. Is like I remember when I first came in, everyone was like, "Oh my God, new Asian girl!" Like it's like a hot commodity, you know.
Did you originally like? Is there a tendency to just stereotype you? Okay, you're going to be in a massage parlor. Or you're going to be.
I could be a masseuse. Like seriously, I think if I like tried out to actually work at Burke Williams right now, they would hire me.
You're like, seriously? Is that all you got?
Yeah. I mean, I've had sushi on my naked body. I mean,
of course.
And it doesn't end. I mean, it's not like you get to a certain level and you don't do those scenes anymore. I'm playing a masseuse in 2 weeks.
Because
I'm doing a big massage movie.
That's the fantasy though, right?
Yeah. And at first I hated it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was like, oh, this is so dumb. I'm so sick of like being the same role over and over. And now I'm like, you know what? This is what keeps me working. I'm going to just embrace it.
You have to give the people what they want to a certain
mm-hmm.
extent. That's
for sure.
Your fan base is always going to want that, right?
Yeah. And, you know, like at the end of the day, like even, you know, with all these typecasting and cliche and stereotypes, I do feel like it's a celebration rather than like being degraded.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like I don't know, like playing a sumo wrestler or something, you know? Like,
which would be awesome.
Well, actually, I specifically said that because they asked me once to do it.
To play a sumo wrestler
yeah.
or to bang a sumo wrestler?
No, to play one.
What about banging a sumo wrestler? The first Asa Akira sumo wrestler scene.
I would be totally opposed.
That'd be
like,
interesting,
if the guy
right?
Were cool,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
I mean, you got a lot to, you know, a lot to squeeze play and
with,
play with,
yeah.
Right?
You know? And I've worked with like BBW girls who are like,
what's BBW?
Big beautiful woman.
Gotcha.
So it's basically
bigger
a woman
girls.
Who's like 300 pounds.
Wow.
And that's actually a lot of fun.
In what way?
It's like,
it's so different from what you're used
it's
to.
It's just different from what I'm used to, and it's like, this sounds so cheesy, but you know that song, Your Body is a Wonderland? It's like that. Like, there's so much. There's yeah. just so much of it. And, like, it's just like there's just so much to grab. And, like, it's almost, like, more sexual.
The bigger the cushion, the better the pushing.
Yeah, I guess.
Right? But, you know, you talked about you know, in 2 weeks you have a massage movie booked. I mean, mm-hmm. what's your schedule like? You talked about how you work for like the biggest agent mm-hmm. in the industry, who's kind of like the top level, like the William Morris or the CAA of
yeah.
you know, of porn. So at this point, you can pretty much pick and choose the projects that you
for
get, right?
Sure. Oh, definitely. I mean, well, right now I signed a contract with Wicked Pictures, mm-hmm. so now I'm pretty much shooting one movie a month, but. When I was just freelance, like working, Spiegler is my agent. Mm-hmm. And when he was representing me and just booking all my work, I was working like 5-6 days a week. So it's a huge difference.
Wow.
It's a huge difference. But it's kind of like one of those things where, like now, I don't know that I could work 5-6 days a week. Like
that's crazy,
it
right?
It burnt me out. But at the time, it just didn't, I don't know, like it was.
That's just how it was.
I wanted to be working a lot. Yeah. And like, it's weird. I think, I don't know what it is. Like maybe because I'm in a relationship now mm-hmm. or it's not that like, I don't like my job anymore, but I don't know that I could be hustling like that, like 6 days a week mm-hmm. shooting scenes, like being on set from 8 a.m. till like, you know, 8
yeah.
at night. Like it's just, I don't know that I have that in me. And well, maybe it's just getting older. I don't know.
And experience too.
Yeah.
And making it to a certain level.
And having that experience,
yeah.
like, I don't need to gain that experience
yeah, yeah, yeah.
anymore. So.
You know, when I was reading your book, you know, knowing that we were going to talk, there's a couple of things. I'm kind of weird at what things stand out to me.
Mm-hmm.
I was interesting to me, you mentioned filming 5 or 6 scenes in a week, but you said that, you know, you had really bad acne
mm-hmm.
because of the makeup that you have to wear and the light.
So
I can totally see that
bad.
Because nothing worse than when you're on set all day and you can just feel that grunge. So how is it for you when you show up and let's say you have acne or let's say you have a big pimple on your ass or
yeah.
maybe you just feel bloated or sick or like how do you...
I have a lot of days like that. I mean, even now, like the acne was to me, like I had never had acne until that mm-hmm. point. Like mm-hmm. as a teenager, I didn't have it. So to me, it was like crippling. Like I didn't want to leave the house unless it was for work. And like mm-hmm. at least once I get to set, I know they're going to put makeup on me and like through the camera, it won't be as... bad
mm-hmm.
but like I never wanted to go to like meet up with friends and stuff. It was like, I mean, it was like really, it was like having a horrible rash on your face
mm-hmm.
you know,
right
so it was so depressing to me. And I mean, I guess it was like, it's weird to think it was worth it, but I mean, I would still do it all over again, mm-hmm. even if I had to suffer that
well,
again.
Well, because you have to be the ultimate fantasy girl at all times. You
yeah.
know, you're a 10 at all times, and you walk around a bra and panty, and you're having, you know, you're never
so
not sexy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know? Like, I think we all have a little bit of body dysmorphic disorder. Is it like that in wrestling?
Dysmorphic meaning that you're not happy with yourself?
Like, it's never... You're never good enough.
Once again, I think when you're younger, you know, especially because wrestling, once again, I always say that wrestlers and strippers or even porn stars mm-hmm. are very similar because you're on the road, you're traveling, you're putting on a show, but it's mm-hmm. a very physical, you know, you got to always look good.
Yeah.
You always have to look your best.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're always worried about what you're eating and I got to
yeah.
train and oh, I can't have this donut because I got to
yeah.
go on TV tomorrow. So it's very much a body-based business.
Yeah.
So it is hard because we're all human beings. Like you said, sometimes you just want to say, screw it, I'm going to eat all this pizza and that's the way it is. But
for
when
sure.
you see yourself the next day and there's a little bit of fat hanging over.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and sometimes you don't even realize it. Like I lost about 30 pounds in the last 3 years. And if you Google – Fat Jericho, you'll see pictures of me where it's like, holy smokes, like, that's you? And I'm like, I'm telling people, like, I was getting fat. Like, no, you weren't. I'm like, Google Fat Jerrica right now. And you see it and you go, oh my gosh, like, how in the hell did I look
at it?
Didn't realize it at the time.
See, you're the opposite of me then, because my favorite thing to do, and this is probably like revealing so much mental unhealthiness about myself right now, but my favorite thing to do is when I Google myself, I like to look at the pictures on the days that I felt my fattest.
Okay.
And then I'm like, you know what? I didn't look so bad.
Yeah,
all in my head.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, for sure, it's – I definitely – like, I'm thinking about my diet and my workout and all that. I'm thinking about that like 50% of my day, for sure.
So when you show up to do a scene, do you now do you have to approve who you're going to be working with?
Mm-hmm.
Before, did you have to approve it? Okay.
I wouldn't so much say approve as like – they let you know who you're working with as soon as they have that information, which is like a few days in advance. And then you have the option to say that person is on my no list or I don't want to work with this person. So it's not like you're forced to work with anyone you don't want to. But it's also not like I'm like, I want to work with so-and-so. Mm-hmm, and then I get to always choose.
What would put somebody on the no list?
For me, it's very personal. Like it's nothing to do with like like, none of my decisions like that are business-based. They're just like, I didn't vibe well with him.
You just don't feel a chemistry or a connection.
Or like, yeah, exactly. Like, it's
– because it's still – I mean, it's, even though it's sex as your job, but it's still a real physical connection.
For sure. It's
you know?
A really emotional thing. I mean, like it's impossible not to get emotional. Like, there have been so many times, like, during the scene, I thought, I'm like, oh, my God, what if this guy was my boyfriend? Mm. Or, like, maybe I could date this person.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, I'm going home. I'm like, what was I thinking?
In the moment. Same way as you would think that if you were out at a club and you to drink some drinks and wake up in the morning, it's like, wow, did I end up with this girl? Ugh.
Totally. And, like, honestly, for me, like, that's the main reason I – don't think I make a good escort is because I'm not very good at separating like the emotions from sex.
Mm-hmm.
And like when I'm on set, it's a performance. Like it has a different like objective, I mm-hmm. guess. So like even if I do have feelings, it's like there's all these people on set. Like
it's
very
you
clear like when your day is done and you get your check and you go home. Whereas like with the escorting, I was like, hey, like, why don't you call me tomorrow? You know,
here's my number.
Yeah, exactly. So, that just is like, it's too much of a, it messes with my mind
mm-hmm.
too much.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but now, you know, you're married, mm-hmm. your husband, Tony is a porn star as
yeah.
well. So how is that?
Well, see what I mean? Like, I'm not good at separating.
Yeah. No, did you met him before? Did you guys do some scenes together before you were together?
No, the first time I laid eyes on him, we were shooting. The camera was already rolling.
Okay.
And it was like kind of this cool setup because he's been in the business 20 years and he's, you know, so, like very well known in like the porn world. And but he's European.
Mm-hmm.
So he was always working in Europe and he's like this guy I always wanted to work with.
He's Spanish.
Yeah. So I requested him for a scene with this director that I love working with and she's like my friend. So it's cool like that. Like she'll, you know, hook it up for me.
Right.
So he was in town. He was in America and I requested him and she's like, okay, like don't even look at each other until like I'm already rolling. So the camera started rolling and then I walk out of this room and then it was just like crazy. Like it was like crazy electric and like I hadn't even done anal at that point and I like let him do it. And
he was the first.
It was just, yeah, like it was, and it ended up being my first DP scene.
Okay.
Too. And then, like, I was just like, hey, like, why don't you take me to lunch tomorrow?
Yeah, you want to call me tomorrow?
It literally was like that. And then, yeah. And then the next day we went on a date.
So, I mean, obviously you guys are both professionals and separating, you know, your mm-hmm. work from mm-hmm. your home life.
Mm-hmm.
Does it ever cause any issues that you're both having sex with other people for work? And
now, no.
Mm-hmm.
Now I think we have it down. But of course, I have mornings where I wake up and I'm in a bad mood and I'm like, what? You're working with her again?
Oh, sure. Again?
Yeah. That's
Would you like
the main
her?
Thing. That's the main thing is like the, oh, again. And then also we both direct.
Yeah.
So when you're a director, you get to pull – put yourself with the person you want to be with, you know? So I'm not that he's ever said anything, but I'm very conscious of like never putting myself with the same guy two movies back to back. And I think I just do that because I'm sensitive about it when he does it. So we haven't like fought about work in like years.
Mm-hmm. And you've been together
We've been together for we've been dating for a while, but he was always in Spain. Mm-hmm. So we've been like together for 3 years.
Does that happen often where guys and girls in porno meet and date and get married? I mean,
it's like such an incestuous.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, first of all, because we're all working with each other, but yeah, like everyone's dated everyone.
There's certain people that just
get connected. And it gets so messy because then it's like the no list. And and like you can't work with your exes, which is like 20 people. And like it gets very complicated.
I know in wrestling, I mean, it's not a secret society, but only we understand the real ins and outs, no pun intended, of that world. Sure, it's the same in porn. Do you have certain girls that you're really good friends with, or are most of your friends outside of the business?
I would say most of my friends are definitely outside of the business.
Really?
Yeah, like most of my friends are like from high school.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have girls that I really like in the business, and I'll hang out with them, especially in LA because all my friends are back home in New York. But yeah, like there's a few – like London Keys I love, Jesse Andrews, Dana D'Armond. So there's definitely like a few girls I really, really like.
And how about guys? Some guys that just like, you know, this guy's cool. He's like my buddy, but I'm just banging him sometimes when I have to.
Honestly, I'm either banging them or I'm not.
Yeah.
Like even associating with them.
No, there's no after parties or anything like that.
And honestly, like I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that I'm married now. Because like if Tony were to like go to dinner with a girl he worked with, I would die.
Even if they were just friends. Yeah.
I would die.
Yeah.
Like it would... I'd be heartbroken.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I think like when your business is sex, that's where you kind of have to shy away.
Draw the line.
Is like the emotional part, which is like the opposite of the rest of the world.
So you mentioned some of your friends that you have in the business. Were there some inspirations that you had, like some girls when you first came in that maybe took you under your wing, or someone like, for example, Jenna Jameson's got her own web empire, or was there somebody like...
For me, it wasn't Jenna Jameson because by the time I got in, she was already out.
Right, I mean, but somebody like that
could
create an empire.
Well, Gina Lynn, when I got in, she was the one that brought me in. So for sure, she was like my mentor and I looked up to her. And I remember the year I got into the business, I went to my first AVN award show, and that was the year Jenna Hayes just killed it. Like, she won everything, and she started directing, and she had her own Fleshlight, and like, just, and she, her website was doing amazing, and like, she was the one I was like, I want to be like that.
Right. I want to be like that girl.
For sure. Definitely. And then I became friends with her. So like, that's a really cool thing for me too. It's like a lot of times you meet the people you want to meet or look up to and you're so disappointed, which I think a lot of girls feel that way with Jenna Jameson even. Like now, you know, so I feel like really lucky that I idolized someone that ended up being cool.
Being cool, yeah. Exactly. Now, you mentioned this a couple times in your book talking about a Fleshlight. What exactly is a Fleshlight?
So it's some people would call it a pocket pussy. It looks like a Fleshlight.
Like a flashlight?
It
looks like a flashlight.
The word Fleshlight is Fleshlight. No longer even in my vocabulary.
It looks like a flashlight.
It looks like a Fleshlight. But when you take the cap off, instead of there being a light, there is a mold of me,
all three of your holes.
All three of my holes. Okay. And in porn, that's like... When you get your own Fleshlight, it's like you've
That's like getting your own action figure in wrestling.
It's like Michael Jordan getting a shoe. You know what I mean? Like it's like that.
That's how you know that you've made it to the big time. So how do they take – does they take a mold of this or something?
They take
like
a mold of – like I went down to Texas where their headquarters are, HQ is.
Fleshlight HQ.
Can I
help you?
And they molded me. And see, like, that's an example of somewhere being Asian really helped me. Because in a time where there are no, like, token Asian girls, I'm their token
Asian
girl.
You're the Fleshlight.
Yeah.
Fleshlight.
And, like, honestly, like, at the time that I got it, I think I would get one now, but, like, at the time that I got it, I don't know that I was at the level where if I weren't Asian, if I were a blonde girl,
never.
Too much competition. Oh, my gosh. So,
has there ever been any blonde Asians?
There's one, but I'm.
You don't, yeah, it's kind of weird, right?
It's weird.
If you want, if you're gonna want Asian, you want full
yeah,
on Asian.
Yeah, it's kind of confusing. That's like its own thing.
So how do they take the mold? Are they putting some putty down there, or
clay? It's kind of like they put like this liquid stuff that turns into putty, and they put paper mache like stuff over it to like cast it.
Gotcha.
So it's pretty cool. I've done it so many times because I've been molded for like different things.
Many different models. And
like I just did a real doll. And they molded like my hands and my feet and my nipples and stuff. Yeah, it's really cool. So it feels like kind of nice.
Have you ever heard of the plaster casters?
What's that?
Back in the late 60s, early 70s, there was this group of groupies, rock star groupies, and they would go take plaster casts of rock stars' penises. Jimi Hendrix, John Morrison, or Jim
Where
Morrison.
Are they?
I'm sure they're still around, but it's the famous plaster casters. If you Google it, you'll see.
And do they still do it now?
I don't know.
You should do it.
I should, yeah, for sure. I guess you just stick it in a bucket of plaster and get casted, man. But I know
it's
for
probably exactly the same process.
It's probably exactly. You know, I remember for sure they were talking about the Hendrix one. So that's the plaster casters.
So
you've got
when
your
they
own.
Do it, like. Do they do it hard or soft?
I guess they do it – I guess it would kind of mold around this plaster and then you pull it out.
No, but I mean would the guy be erect?
Yes, he would have to be erect.
Yeah. I would imagine it would be hard to stay hard.
Hard, right, in plaster. But unless
– I mean it takes like 15 minutes to set.
Well, I guess that maybe they have plaster caster fluffers.
Maybe.
I'm not sure.
Or in the business, we have some guys, very few guys, but there are like maybe four or five guys that use something called Caverject.
What is
which
that?
Which is for, it's for actually paraplegics and quadriplegics.
Oh.
And it's an injection, and you put it in the base of the penis, and 10 minutes later, it's rock hard and it won't go down for like 3 hours.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So what's that called?
Caverject.
Caverject.
Or Caverject.
See, I'm learning.
Something like that.
I'm learning Caverject, every day. You talked earlier before about directing. You said, what am I going to do when I can't be on screen anymore? Have you ever thought of maybe going behind the scenes? I know some girls have done that.
Yeah. Like, I mean, that's kind of one of the main reasons I started directing. And to be perfectly honest, it's like not even close to as much fun as performing.
Probably not as much money either.
It's definitely not as much money. But it's still like good money to live on.
But not what you're used to when you're
It's not
queen.
What I'm used to. And like Tony loves directing just as much as he loves performing. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm so jealous because I just don't like that responsibility. Like to me, I love being on set. That part's fun. But everything around it, I'm like, ugh.
So much organization.
Yeah,
you have to be in charge of everything when you're directing, right?
Yeah. And like, honestly, it's just, it hasn't been the most fun for me. Like it's fun. And to see the final product is really gratifying.
Because that's your vision.
For sure. And like, I actually like sitting in with the editor.
Mm-hmm.
That part's fun to me. But, I don't know that that's like the next thing
Doesn't,
I'll do.
Yeah, not the same vibe.
Like,
right?
I don't know that that's my plan B.
Mm-hmm. Kind of switch back. I said something earlier. Now we laughed about the fluffers.
Mm-hmm.
Is that kind of just low level, just normal people?
It's not a real thing. Like I'm the fluffer.
Oh, you just
yeah.
Okay. You don't
yeah.
actually have
There's
someone
no the fluffers.
Fluffer. We need
yeah,
a fluffer over
no.
here. Okay.
And like honestly, like even if there were a fluffer, I think I would want to do it myself because I think it's like so important to like keep the chemistry going and like
right.
you know part of it the charade is like that like you're into each other
mm-hmm.
so and I think. Like with a fluffer, it would remove that.
You want to be the one who's causing the erection.
Yeah.
Be method,
so,
method acting.
Yeah,
here.
Exactly. Exactly. It's method acting. So, yeah, but I've never seen or even heard of a fluffer.
Okay. So that's just an urban
yeah,
legend.
Like and I mean, there's guys in the business who've been in since the 70s and they're like, no,
fluffer.
I've never seen a fluffer.
Okay. Now, you talked about your fascination in the book with the glory hole,
yeah.
which is something that I'd never really seen, but you just love the concept. You're even laughing right now. Like, yeah, glory hole.
You know, it's not even like specifically glory holes that I love. It's just like, It's so cool to me. I love anything sexual. Like anything to do with sex, I love. And I get immediately obsessed with. So when there's like something that I've never seen, I'm just like, oh my gosh, tell me everything about it. And a glory hole was something I had never seen in real life.
Yeah.
So it was just really cool. Like I was like putting my finger in it. Like,
now, do you know Steel Panther?
The band?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have a song called Glory Hole.
Oh, really?
You need to YouTube the video for Glory Hole. You will laugh. It's so funny.
I'm gonna watch that tonight.
Steel pan, it's over the top ridiculous, but the song is actually really catchy too. So when you started talking about the Glory Hole, I can't stop singing this stupid Steel Panther song in my head. And even on top of that, I don't even know what I was doing to research this, whatever. There, have you ever heard of a milking table?
I'm picturing something, but I don't know if that's what it's called.
Is it a glory hole on a table? It's a horizontal glory hole, where the girl goes under the table.
Yeah.
And that's the dumbest one of all because the guy's lying
here. You know what, though? I heard it's amazing.
Really?
I've never done it. I think Tony did a scene, I guess, on this milking table, whatever.
the milking table.
Yeah, like he was booked for it, and it was like some Japanese thing.
Right.
But like he said something to do with the gravity. Like it makes it amazing.
Upside down, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And like I guess all the gravity is like going in the right direction
pointing down.
To have like a really hard boner or something. I don't even know.
Well, the blood is going down. Yeah. Right? The blood is rushing down.
Yeah, but he said it was cool.
Just a couple last questions. What is your favorite type of scene to have?
Honestly, just one-on-one with someone I really like, which is surprising to a lot of people because I think I'm known for like my, you know, like I do a lot of really rough things like gangbangs and I definitely have like really wild fantasies, but at the end of the day, I like being like intimate.
Mm-hmm.
So one-on-one to me is really exciting. And I like making a connection.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
well, you said in the book that you kind of fall in love slightly with the partners that you enjoy being with, which I think you
and
have
like
to.
Yeah.
I mean, like, at least for the moment.
For sure. And you know, even when I first got in the business, it was kind of like one of those things where I'm like, I can't be doing that. But now I'm just like, screw it. Like, why not allow myself that?
No, but your husband doesn't like you to have gangbangs anymore.
Yeah. Well,
or there's a limit.
That hasn't even come up since then.
Okay. That's a story in your book. There's like an extra guy kind of slipped it in.
Officially making it a gangbang, I guess, in his eyes. But now his thing is like he never really puts – we don't really
no
have
limits.
Like – yeah. Like because – and I think most of it is because he doesn't want me to put limits on him.
Mm-hmm.
And like – but his thing is like he doesn't want me to lick men's – buttholes.
Okay. That's the rule.
That's the rule. That's the official rule.
I have to kiss
your
mouth.
That's one that's like, that's non-negotiable. Girls, like in his mind, girls are clean and pristine and guys are disgusting.
Girls poop roses. That's why.
Girls don't poo.
Yeah, that's right.
Obviously. So, he's like, absolutely not. And he caught me doing it once.
Oh, and you were grounded.
Yeah, and he
you lost your allowance.
He was really mad. But like the thing is, I was using a strap-on the guy, so I was like, "Well, I'm not gonna like just shove it in dry, you know."
Lube help the guy out here. You're just being a good coworker.
Yeah, like I felt like it was justifiable.
Okay, I'm sure that was quite the argument that you had. Your favorite movie that you performed in, or your favorite scene?
I have so many.
Well, tell me some of them.
I love all my firsts. Like my first DP, I love. Mm-hmm. I love my first gangbang. I love my first anal.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like one of those people, like I always think the last thing I just did is like the most amazing.
Which is great, yeah.
Yeah, so I just did a movie called Asa Gets Wicked, which I think is like amazing.
Great title, on Wicked Video.
Yeah, and like I just love watching it. And the cool thing about Wicked is like they make you look awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And
very classy.
It's very, it's like old school porn where like the girl is a fantasy and like she's like this untouchable being. Like,
right.
And like, you know, for the past 6 years, I've been shooting straight up gonzo, which is like.
I never heard of that before.
You have an eyelash on your neck and like.
What does gonzo mean?
Gonzo means there's no plot and it's
just sex.
Definitely marketed mainly toward men. I mean, of course, women enjoy it. I enjoy it. But for the most part, it's marketed toward men. And it's just no dialogue, no plot, just sex, maybe a striptease. And feature porn is like where there's a whole story. It's like a movie with
right.
sex in it.
Right, right.
And that's like where the Jenna Jamesons, the Stormy Daniels, like that mm-hmm. era comes in. And so for me, that's like what I really looked up to growing up, as odd as that mm-hmm. sounds. So for me, it's really exciting to be a part of that world now.
Right. You know, it's funny. I love that your name. Like when I was in high school, our shop teacher was called Mr. Woods. Like he grew up with the name Mr. Woods. You know he's going to be working with wood.
Right.
Your name is Asa, and you end up as the anal queen.
Yeah.
Porn. I mean, it was a given.
That's my real name.
That's why I was like, there's no way that's a real name.
And you know what's so funny? Like my parents, my mom always tells me, like, we named, because in Japanese it means morning.
Uh-huh.
Like good morning.
Good morning, right.
And she's always like, we named you that because we wanted your life to be filled with morning sunshine. And I'm like, oh my God.
Filled with something.
Yeah, filled with something.
Do you have a good relationship with your mom? Does she accept what you do?
Yeah. Like we talk every day. We don't talk about work.
Right.
But I mean, what... It would be like any parent talking with their kid about their sex life.
Yeah,
it just happens to be my job. So, but we're really close. We talk every day. She's in New York still.
And your dad too.
Yeah, and my dad. Cool. I mean, I talk to my dad like once a week, but you know, my parents are still together.
Hey, if you're going to do something, be the best at it. I'm sure your parents always told you that when you were a kid. So it's like, all right.
It's that Asian mentality, right?
The book is called Insatiable Porn, A Love Story. Asa's been amazing. I have to ask you to do me one favor. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine is a porn entrepreneur. He knows everything. And he's been telling about Asa Akira for years. Oh, Asa Akira, Asa Akira, Asa Akira. When I told him I was going to be interviewing you, he was like, oh my gosh. He gave me this list of questions of like I couldn't ask any of them on the air. But can you just do me a favor and say hello, Spiwi?
Spiwi?
Spiwi, yeah.
Hey, Spiwi. Too bad you're not here. We could have had a good time, maybe.
Ah, see, there you go, Spiwi. You owe me for life. Asa, it's been amazing talking to you. It's been
so much
fun.
Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. Thanks to Mark Gerald for setting it up.
Yes. Can I just tell you, my boyfriend, my ninth grade boyfriend, is going to be so jealous. So jealous. I remember staying up late watching like WCW, ECW. Like he made me watch all of that. So yeah, he's going to be super jealous.
There you go. We can laugh. Super jealous, but the fact of who you are. Here. Thanks to Asa Akira. Very, very cool girl, super funny, and her book, Insatiable Porn, A Love Story, out now. Go check it out. Check out the new Fozzy record, Do You Want to Start a War? And check us out in concert with Theory of a Dead Man tonight, Knoxville, Tennessee, at the International. We're on our own headlining with Three Pill Morning, a very, very cool band out of Minnesota. That's Sunday night at the Gramercy Theater. Don't miss this show. It's going to be a very, very special, very cool show for all of our Fozzy family in the New York area. Monday, back with Theory and Lancaster at the Chameleon Club. Tuesday, October 7th, at the House of Blues in Boston. Don't forget, new book, Best in the World at What? I Have No Idea, October 14th. Pre-order it now. There's all the appearances and signings for that, which I said earlier. And you know, I wouldn't be doing this at all if not for you guys downloading two shows every week, and also not for my sexy beast sponsors who help us pay for the production costs of doing this for you for free for twice a week. And if you want to help support the show, easiest way to do that is do your online shopping through Amazon and do it through my links. Easy to find. Go to podcastone.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page. Then click on Talk is Jericho. You'll see all three of my Amazon links, UK, USA, Canada, A. Every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cash to the show so we can keep doing this for you for free for twice a week. No extra fees, no hidden charges. You're just getting your shopping done. You're helping me out in the process. All right. That's another fine, fun-filled edition of Talk is Jericho. We'll see you next week. But in the meantime and in between time, that's it. Stay hard. Stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. We'll see you next week. Next week on Wednesday, John Morrison. Yeah, my old bud John Morrison is going to be on Talk is Jericho. So don't you dare miss it. It's going to be a big, big show. And to go with that, I got a big, big yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.